And I know that we live in a world where the patient has been lost. You know, nowadays we call them clients or we call them members or subscribers. But, you know, I grew up with Marcus Welby, and, you know, the idea of a patient is still very ingrained in me and in our organization. So we're here to provide the best possible result for a patient. It's incumbent upon us to do that. That's our commitment as human beings, and we must do whatever we can to provide the best results. And I think when you look at the Hippocratic Oath, it says do no harm. So if we can provide a better diagnosis, if we can do something for our patients, we're going to do it. And part of this journey is because we want to be able to give them the best from us. And I think that as human beings, we need to do that.
Learn about the newest digital pathology trends in science and industry. Meet the most interesting people in the niche and gain insights relevant to your own projects. Here is where pathology meets computer science. You are listening to the Digital Pathology Podcast with your host, Dr. Alexandra Zhurov.
Welcome, my digital pathology trailblazers. Today, my guest is Mariano de Socarres, and Mariano is on the board of director of the Digital Pathology Association. He's also the president of Core Plus. Core Plus, and of course, he's going to give us more information on himself, but I just want to let you know that Core Plus is an anatomic and clinical pathology lab in Puerto Rico, founded in 1996, so already running quite some time. And they not only embraced digital pathology for primary diagnosis before the pandemic, so this is like unheard of in the digital pathology space, but they are also pioneering the use of AI in precision pathology. And Mariano, you are partnering with companies such as Ibex, Alpenglow, Artera, TechSight. You guys are all pioneers. You're using AI for primary diagnosis and right now, like for every patient almost, right? So I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. How are you today?
Great. It's great to be here with you, Alex, and really appreciate you reaching out to us to tell a little bit about our story and where we are, where we've been, and where we're going. So it's exciting to spend some time with you. I congratulate you also for the work you're doing, because it is also pioneering work getting the word out to the community that, you know, digital pathology and AI is real.
Thank you so much. And when I heard your story, I was amazed. So let's start with you. Tell the listeners about your background and the beginnings of Core Plus. What kind of practice is Core Plus, and who are your clients? Who are your patients? Who are you serving?
Well, you know, primarily we're an outpatient practice. We mainly concentrate on offices, surgery centers, et cetera. We just recently started with a hospital. So we're really focused on the outpatient market. And those are our clients, you know, and the specialists, like obviously urology, breast surgeons, OBGYNs, podiatry, dermatologists. So it's a broad spectrum of clinicians that we serve and work with.
How did you start the practice? Tell me about the day where you thought, yes, we're going to open Core Plus.
Yeah, let me give you a little background. I started as a x-ray technologist at Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami. And I don't even want to tell you how many years ago. And during that time, I rotated through diagnostic ultrasound. In those days, it was just little dots on the monitor, nothing like it is today. And really got hooked on technology and medical technology. And from there, I was recruited by a company and started doing what was called then, I'm sure still is, application specialist, and went around the country training radiologists and sonographers. At that time, there was maybe one or two schools in the nation. So most of it was kind of an on-the-job training. And we did that for a long time. And so I have an imaging background. So fast forward to 1996, I had a distribution company. Diagnostic ultrasound was one of my primary products, obviously with my background. And running into a urologist office promoting the ultrasound, I heard of this, we're going to do prostate biopsies. Well, you can imagine there many, many years back, those procedures weren't done, let alone thinking of a transrectal. I think in those days it would have been impossible. So we learned about that. And as an entrepreneur, I kept on looking and really dug into what was all the biopsy business about. And, really got interested in it and thought that we could provide a service to the urologist. And that's how I started the company. And that's why it's called Core, from Core Biopsy, and then Plus as an added service. So that's how we started back in 96, concentrating on neuropathology, which has always been a focus of our business since day one. Then in about 2000, and so, keep that imaging background there. In around 2007, 2008, I always thought that, when is pathology going to convert to imaging? I mean, it's just natural. And I got involved with a company in the Bay Area called Bioimaging. Mohan Attawar was one of the founders, and then Ajit Singh came in, and we were their first customer. And I mean, it was kind of, when you think about it today, it was kind of crude, and we were really doing it for ER, PR, HER2, and it was just counting. I mean, it wasn't anything like what it is today, obviously. But that really showed, what I thought would be decoupling the pathologist from the glass. And so we started to work with that. But unfortunately, I think, things didn't really work out yet, and maybe wasn't really prime time. I wasn't ready for prime time to really convert your practice to primary reads. So we had that initial contact back in 2008. Fast forward to 2018, and since we're very involved in neuropathology, we saw a press release from UPMC and IBEX, and it intrigued me because they were talking about using AI to diagnose prostate cancer, and immediately that opened up the curiosity for us to really see how real is that. And so we made contact with IBEX and with Yoshi, the CEO, came to Puerto Rico to validate that we really existed. And we started our relationship. And then in 2019, we decided as an organization that by January 1st of 2020, we would be converted to whole slide imaging for primary reads. So we took 2019 to visit and participate in different seminars. Dr. Juan Carlos Santa, our chief medical officer, and myself. So we took that year to do that. So that's the beginning. The other thing is that we do have a technology company, and I've always been interested in technology, and I think it's important. So we've built our own.
So this is in parallel to your practice, to Core Plus.
Right.
Like this is another company that supports you with your the cutting edge stuff.
Right. And we call, I don't like the word LIS, and everybody knows it. I like to use the word pathology workflow, because I think it's totally different than a laboratory information system. Even though we do things that are PCR based and others that would be considered under the laboratory. But the workflow in pathology is really different than the workflow in a clinical laboratory kind of environment. So, we've always focused on workflow, and that's how I like to talk about it. It's a pathology workflow platform. Right now, what we're looking at is a digital AI enabled ecosystem as we, roll that out in the future. So in 2019, we made a decision to either buy something off the shelf, or because we had the technology company, to just do it in-house. And we really wanted to control our destiny. We don't want to be in somebody else's ecosystem. They think that the technology that was available was really state-of-the-art from our perspective. And so we decided and embarked on creating our own ecosystem. So by January 1st of 2020, we used the CAP guidelines for validation. And we went through and validated our histology, immunohistochemistry, and special stains.
So you did everything. basically for digital reads. So there's no like, right. You do the H&Es, but the IT still comes on glass.
No.
This is so
everything.
Cool. I love like your, okay, we decided in 2018 we're going to learn about it. Then in 2019, we decided we're going to implement. And by January 1st, 2020, we were up and running. This is so cool. I mean, it's fantastic, but it's also unheard of. Like institution, even a company following a plan like that to a T is impressive. So it's also funny that IBEX had to come and check if you really existed in Puerto Rico. And that brings me to a question. How was the digital pathology journey introducing it in Puerto Rico? Did it even matter, the location? I mean, I assume you're pioneers there, but in general, you're pioneers in the U.S. and there's only a certain percentage of digitally enabled pathology practices. So how was it? What sparked your interest in doing this there, actually?
Yeah. You know, a
how did you end
things.
Up in Puerto Rico?
Yeah. You know, a couple of things are, number one is, you know, just as an organization, our interest in technology. So, I mean, we embrace technology. You know, I would like to think that we're a technology company that does pathology versus a pathology company that uses technology. I mean, we really embrace technology, number one. We like to be at the cutting edge. We can guide our own destiny. So kind of, you know, the buck stops here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the most important part is that we had full buy-in from all the stakeholders. I mean, nobody ever said a peep about, let's not do this. So the whole team was excited about doing this. And I think that was really the catalyst to get this done in the time frame that we did it.
Mm-hmm. So did you encounter any challenges? What were the challenges?
Well, you know, if there weren't any challenges, then everybody else would be doing this. But I think the biggest challenge that a lot of people face is number one, internal. And I think we were able to, that one wasn't a problem.
Is that because of the company mindset that you started the company with? Like you say, you're a technology company that does pathology. Before you were a technology company that was enabling radiology. So like because the technology is at the core, it wasn't a problem to leverage it for another discipline?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that is, you know, also the, you know, having that background from imaging also helps because it's really the same thing. You know, years back we used to carry, you know, the X-ray film, and, you know, you needed a carts to carry that. And, you know, and the same thing with digital, you know, with slides. So, you know, imaging was able to decouple the radiologist from the film. And, you know, the same thing in my mind should happen with pathology. And once we digitize, as you well know, there's a whole new universe that opens up. And opportunities that as we're seeing today, right? So really participating in this is really transformative in my mind to the practice of pathology. I mean, this is breaking, you know, what we had before. And it's a whole new world out there.
It gives this ideal picture, which for you is reality, where, okay, if there was no internal resistance, this is how we did it. This was our first date. This was another deadline. And then we did it. And we just did it because everybody said yes. A question, like, did the physicians that you work with, did they even care that it was done on digital? Did they have any concerns? Like, did they audit you? It doesn't really matter.
It's funny. I don't think it matters. I think that some like it, some understand, because it really places you in the forefront. And so from that perspective, they're interested that they know that you're really at the cutting edge and you're providing the best care for their patients. So I think it is important to do that. And they see the opportunities in the things that we've been doing. So obviously the bigger impact has been AI as an additional tool to help make sure we give the best diagnosis possible.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You saw a press release with IBEX that was that had this prostate solution. And what did you just like call them and say, hey, we want to implement that as well?
Sort of. Yeah, that's kind of how I do it. A little bit. No, I did one of those websites, you know, fill in and they answered. Mm-hmm. So they were real too on the other side. So they answered. But for us, you know, we've been always up to date with Gleason scoring and, you know, mm-hmm. just, so this was just something very, very curious to us because we wanted to be there. We wanted to be part of this transformation and we wanted to, you know, kind of believe it. We wanted to try it. We wanted to see if this was really real.
Mm-hmm. So how did you go about the validation and what is the added value for your patients and for your clinicians from this particular application, the prostate one that you do with IBEX, but then also tell me what other things you have already implemented and in the pipeline, because this is not the only AI algorithm that you guys are using on a daily basis.
Right. Well, you know that, you know, number one is why we do this, and we do this for mm-hmm. the patients. And I know that we live in a world where the patient has been lost. You know, nowadays we call them clients or we call them members or subscribers. But, you know, I grew up with Marcus Welby and, you know, the idea of a patient is still very ingrained in me and in our organization. So we're here to provide the best possible result for a patient. It's incumbent upon us to do that. That's our commitment as human beings. And we must do whatever we can to provide the best results. And I think when you look at the Hippocratic Oath, it says to no harm. So mm-hmm. if we can provide a better diagnosis, if we can do something for our patients, we're going to do it. And part of this journey is for that because we want to be able to give them the best from us. And I think that as human beings, we need to do that. So that aside, you know, we felt that, you know, how could these tools help us? And you know, just a curiosity factor, number one, was, you know, can an AI tool detect cancer better or equal to a pathologist? So that was, you know, an important fact. But before that, I think that I don't want to lose the sight of just converting your practice or the transformation to digital, because I think that alone brings tremendous value to the field. Mm-hmm. Now we have the ability of remote reading. I mean, it's funny because I have a background still that I use where Dr. Santa and Dr. Sanaudia are pictured. There's kind of become a famous picture around and they have their masks on, and somebody says, "Well, you got to update." I said, "No, you know, I leave it there because it tells you how long we've been doing this." Mm-hmm. But let's think about it. You know, the ability of remote reading. Let's think about the ability to now, if you want to change the gamma of that slide, you can. I mean, you can't do that with a physical slide. Mm-hmm. And professional satisfaction. You know, I think it's an area that we don't even think about. You know,
I think it's very under communicated. Mm-hmm. When you look at like generally in the physician world, you will see headlines, physician burnout, physician like bad mental health issues with people who are supposed to take care of us. I don't think in the pathology world we like kind of translate it, but pathologists are part of this physician group, right? So definitely something super important.
They have the same pressures, I think, as anybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, and also now once we have digitized this image, we can share it. I mean, all the opportunities are there from that side alone. And we've done some analysis internally, and we feel that just going digital increases the efficiency by about 30%.
Mm-hmm. How many pathologists do you have?
We have six pathologists, subspecialties.
They work remotely or hybrid? Or
hybrid. Mm-hmm. Hybrid. Some are almost 100% remote, mm-hmm. But it's hybrid. And so that gives them a nice balanced quality of life. So it's some that have children, you know, need to be around, or that balance, I think, is important in today's world. We have to do that. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, if you need to read at 5 a.m. or at 12 midnight, you can do it. I mean, nobody can stop, you know, that's up to you. So I think it gives you that nice work-life balance. I think another factor is ergonometrics. I mean, our pathologists are running from a 49-inch monitor. I mean, you know, when you look at their, for instance, a core biopsy, I mean, it's like right there, boom, it's there.
Yeah, you have like the full thing.
So I mean, those are other aspects. You know, how do we quantify that? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, one of the questions I always get asked is what's your ROI? And I kind of talking with some finance friends of mine, I said, I want another acronym. I want to make it sound something different. I said, and so we came up with return on innovation. And how do we, mm-hmm. how do we really come up with that formula? So how do we look at, professional satisfaction, ergonometrics, you know, I mean, obviously efficiency is there, but all these other areas that are important, how do we quantify that? You know, for instance, second opinions, you don't have to send FedEx anymore. So there's a lot of things that we can look at, but we got to just take that step and move on.
Going back to AI. So you guys have the prostate algorithm. What else is out there?
You asked me a question that I think I didn't answer yet.
And the validation.
And the validation, correct. So once we validated our whole slide imaging process, then we were working with IBEX, and we did, we were their first site outside of Maccabi, mm-hmm. to use the AI algorithm for prostate. So this is something they don't do anymore because it's not necessary, but we did a calibration, mm-hmm. but we ran some of our own cases through there, and they did pick a few of our cases to include in the algorithm. And then we went through the validation. As a matter of fact, right now we're putting out for publication our 3 years of data. We've done over 9,500 prostate biopsies using, in this case, the second read system, which is what we started with. So we did the validation. Once we did the validation, we put into operation on June 1st of 2020. Mm-hmm. And we don't discriminate. Every prostate biopsy
goes
through the algorithm. Mm-hmm. So in the initial phase, obviously, which was a second read or what we would consider a 100% QC process, mm-hmm. That would give everybody the comfort to see how the algorithm performed. And so it was really more of a cancer, no cancer, a binary look, which can, you know, we can also add Gleason, but I think in from our perspective was, will it detect it equal to, better than the pathologist? And if you look at the literature right now, uropathologists might have a false negative of about 3%. Mm-hmm. General pathologists could go into the teens. So it is significant. And so what we were able to do, once we operationalized the algorithm, you know, we were able to see that value. So we were able to see the QC value. We wanted to measure that impact on our practice. And we came up with a term called the AI impact. And that was the ability of the algorithm to provide an alert where the pathologist missed it. It wasn't mm-hmm. there. I mean, this was obviously done pre-closing of the case. So in the time we've used it as a quality control tool, we had 73 men that we identified a lesion that wasn't picked up by the pathologist. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're publishing that, and we've talked about that. I mean, we don't have a problem. I mean, this is reality. I mean, we're not.
Yeah, this is basically human visual assessment. You are a human, so.
Yeah. So now, we were able to look at that. And so we were also able to see the interoperator variability between pathologists and obviously their expertise. And so I think what the we came up with this AI impact, and we have some that have a low score, some have a higher score. But at the end, what happens is that the practice benefits, because now there is kind of everybody is equal, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't miss, and the patient benefits, right? We've pretty much eliminated the false negatives. You never say 100%, obviously. Nobody will ever believe 100%, but we're pretty close to that. And then on the other side, when the cases are positive, you know, they're positive. And so I think we're going to end up working in the middle area, right? We're going to be, and now we've moved that to the front end. And so now, because we believe in the algorithm, we've tested it. I mean, that algorithm individually has been run on, you know, 300,000 slides. I mean, it's a huge amount of cases and data. So we're very confident that the algorithm works. I mean, remember that the pathologist is still driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the algorithm is working on its own, but it's another tool, and it'll make you more efficient. It'll help you maintain consistency. And so we're very much convinced that AI is here to stay in all of these other aspects that we're building. We also started with breast at the end of the year. We're looking now at bringing in GI, and this is with IBEX, but we're also, like you said, working with other companies.
So this is also for cancer detection.
Right. Well, cancer, also even microorganisms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for the GI.
For the GI, correct. The other thing that, you know, that this helps you with is really looking at all the different features that sometimes you're looking for in breast microcalcifications or in prostates, nerves. I mean, things like that. Yeah, I can help you and speed you up so you get there faster and don't miss.
Mm-hmm. So do you then identify these things? Because I assume, depending on the company, on your partner, there is like a certain algorithm that they already developed. And then, okay, do I have a use for this? Do you also partner with them in terms of, hey, we would like to have, like you mentioned, the microcalcifications. Can you build an algorithm for that? Because we think it's relevant.
Yeah, no, right now we're not. I mean, right mm-hmm. now we're really ingesting what the companies have. I think we have a very nice relationship with some of our partners where we're really providing them with some feedback, user interface feedback and ideas. But, you know, we're not in the algorithm building business right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we are collaborating. You know, one of the things also that in today's world of diversity, you know, we have a large Hispanic population, so it enriches the algorithm. You know, so we're working with multiple organizations to do that. So provide them with a richer
demographics didn't have. Yeah, because
it's about 20% of the U.S. population. So mm-hmm. you know, when you look at it, that's also a very important aspect in that contribution to having diversity in the algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Very much. I think this is one of the biggest like pushbacks that the advancements in when the algorithms are built in a non-diverse population, which often are big academic centers, big centers that have a lot of cases, but do not have the diversity. And I think there has been a lot of pushback, and there is a good response from the pathology community, like your practice, and I have heard that from others also. Hey, we treat this demographics. How about you use our data as well for enriching the algorithm, for making it more robust?
Yeah, yeah, and that's critical. That's critical, and I, you know, and you know, we have the data. And so we're excited to work with multiple companies on that.
Mm-hmm. And you also described or gave an answer to a question that I didn't ask, but I hear a lot, is like, how do you know that this algorithm is good enough? Well, you just used it for 3 years and basically looked at everything with and without algorithm. And at some point, you know, okay, it's good enough. But it takes time, and it takes specialists that work with this tool for, it's not, you know, okay, we did so-and-so many cases because this and this organization prescribes that. It's a process where the pathologist who's a specialist in this area feels confident, okay, I can use this tool. This is my partner. I don't have to police the algorithm all the time.
Well, I mean, that's why you do validations. And this is a tool for the pathologist. This isn't a replacement for the pathologist, you know, it's hard for people to maybe embrace that. I think with all of the negative publicity about AI and it's taking over the world and, you know, we're all going to lose our jobs and so on and so forth. I think we've heard that when Industrial Revolution, we heard that with the combustion engine, we heard that with
the
personal computers and what did it do? It just brought more employment, new industries and new opportunities. Now, maybe you have to reinvent yourself and maybe that's where people have a problem with, but you know, look, it's here. You either learn about it, you incorporate it because it ain't going away. I mean, the genie's out of the bottle. It's here. It works. It's to the benefit of our patients and the benefit of the professionals. So, you know, there are ways for you to validate. There's ways for you to, you know, and again, I think that everybody wants things to be 100% and nothing in this life.
Nothing in this. I mean, car can break down. We kind of trust our cars by now, right?
Yeah. You know, one other aspect that I think about and we've talked about internally is what I call cognitive fuel. You know, mm-hmm. We all wake up in the morning with kind of our tank, hopefully, if we had a good night's sleep, our tank full. And you know, if you look at our practice, 50% of the cases that we see are negative. Now, when you're in a glass-based environment and non-AI environment, you know, you're looking at each individual slide. And I've seen it numerous times where it's that last slide that has the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other side, you see all of the slides and it's negative. Now, if I were able to already triage the cases for you and let you spend that cognitive fuel better, and now I give you more time to do higher level thought and work, what is the return on investment there?
Better patient care, right?
Maybe you get out and see your referring clinicians. Maybe mm-hmm. you get out and train your staff better. Maybe you write, but things that are maybe of higher value to the organization than maybe sitting behind the microscope and trying to measure and, you know, typing and let the systems do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a lot easier. It's a redistribution of your mental capacity on a daily basis.
So do you have the algorithms triage or like prioritize cases so that the pathologist can basically like, look, okay, here the algorithm said there's going to be cancer. Let me take care of this first thing in the morning before I run out of my cognitive fuel.
Right. Well, you know, right now we've moved it to the front. So now it's a triage mm-hmm. tool. So now they have they have already the cases. You know, here are your negatives. Here are the quote unquote, let's say borderlines, you know, kind of green, yellow, and red. And here are your positives. And, you know, we're an outpatient facility. So we don't have this issue of a stat case, but we just want to turn around everything as soon as possible
mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, not just the ones that quote unquote have cancer, but the patient doesn't know what the result is. So you want to know either negative or positive. You want to know.
Exactly.
If I get the positives out, that's, you know, great. How about the others are waiting to find out, hey, am I positive or negative? So you just want to get everything moved out as quickly as possible for the benefit of the patients, right? Nobody wants to sit around and wait for a diagnosis. And I think that's what's important.
Mm-hmm. So post going digital, did you have like a one worst hurdle that you had to overcome? Like if there was something that you would have to name the one worst thing that you had to deal with after going digital, what was that?
Well, you know, I think that something. Maybe a lesson was, first of all, I mean, we're in an island, number one.
Yes.
So, you know, the only way people can get here is by plane or boats. That's normally by plane. So, you know, making this commitment to whole slide imaging primary read, what I think we find is that our biggest hurdle or things that we have to take care of is redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, our pathologists are remote, let's say, and, you know, if our systems go down, you know, we have a problem. So, mm-hmm. So I think that if there's anything that I think about right now in this time is redundancy, and how do we make that decision to move, then we have to make sure that our uptime is, you know, 99.9%, because mm-hmm. there's no going back. There's no going back.
Did you have a situation where, I don't know, hurricane? I mean, you guys have hurricane season, right?
That's what I'm saying. Is, you know, you, those situations happen and you're like, oh no. So yeah.
Can you tell me about a day when it went down? Or
yeah. It was a day that everything was down. And so it was like, uh-oh, pull out the microscopes from the closet, right? You know, but I'm saying as something to think about if you make that. And I think on another side, it's, you know, you don't want that potential of somebody that maybe isn't 100% convinced to go back. You know, talking with some other people, you know, I think there's still something to be said for glass slides, right? It's kind of easy. You know, you mm-hmm. put it on the microscope and you see it. So, I mean, there's something to be said for that. And so for some people, you know, it's an easy pushback to say, look, I can just, you know, look at it.
Do the same with glass. Why should I invest in everything that comes downstream?
Right. I think that's important. I know our team goes crazy if they have to pick up a microscope. So. You know, that's just not something that they want to do. Mm-hmm. But I say that's one thing. I think the other area that maybe you asked me is, you know, we initially, because we didn't know much about this when we started, you know, we kind of focused on scanners as kind of like the primary area. And I think that's probably the last thing you should think about.
Mm-hmm.
I really think you have to look at your workflow, because you really have to re-engineer your workflow. You have to do a lot of retraining of your staff. So all of those things are important. I also think that thinking about this redundancy issue, I think you have to think about what is your case mix, you know, what's your volume and so on. So that if you're making the commitment to go truly primary reads, that, you know, you have everything in place.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important. I think because this is also a kind of an easy pushback, like, okay, what if your internet is down or what if your computer is down? I don't know. I don't see institutions addressing that I haven't seen too many people talk about this in like a risk management way. Like, okay, it is a risk. We acknowledge it is a risk. We have this and this plan to manage it. Or if it goes beyond so many hours, then we start distributing glass or whatever. Like, it is a legitimate concern, legitimate thing that can go wrong. If you're digital and your digital infrastructure goes down, then you basically cannot provide diagnosis anymore. So I think this is a very valuable point. What do you think?
You know, mm-hmm. you just made a point and just, again, going back to my imaging, I said, imaging has been digital. There's no way, you don't create a film anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If they're down, they're down.
Right.
That's it. I mean, to a certain extent.
Figure out how to get them up as soon as possible.
I'm saying to a certain extent, we have glass, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We at least have backup.
If you think about it, we have a backup plan. Whereas our imaging folks don't. So I think, you know, look, nothing is perfect. Look at the recent issue with United Healthcare and Change Healthcare and the cyber attacks. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a disaster. look, that's the world we live in, and we have to, you know, do the things we need to do to maximize that. But I think another thing that I also been thinking of, it's something that coined a friction. And I think that part of the lack of adoption is that there's still a lot of friction for the pathologist. All of this connectivity issues with the hospital information system, with IT, so it trying to put all of this together.
You also said where it comes from. You mentioned, I thought it's about the scanner. We need to start with the scanner. If you start with the scanner, then you're going to have to fix all the workflow issues. If you start with the workflow, then you present the pathologist with something that's already optimized for their work. And then you kind of eliminate this friction element. But I think there's still, I don't know how to call it, like education that needs to be done, or like pointing out to people who already did it so that those who want to embark on this journey don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah. And again, this is early stage. I mean, if you look at an adoption curve, right? We're really at, I mean, we're into this 4 years, and it's still early in the game. And that expertise, and that's why, use the words friction, because I've seen it now. How do we, and that's why I call it a workflow. I mean, and digital pathology, AI-enabled workflow, because I think if we look at it as a workflow, then we start looking at where that friction is, and we start to use tools that will help us. You know, it's not just tools from a diagnostic perspective, but it's also the tools to help us in the whole workflow aspect. And I think that, in my mind, the future is going to be totally different than we're seeing today. But we have to work through some of those issues right now.
What do you think the future is going to bring in terms of AI and digital innovations?
Well,
trends? I hope for adoption. But are there like any specific trends that you see that are going to be picking up, or something that you're going to be implementing because it's the next cutting edge thing that you want to provide your patients with?
Well, number one is we're working, as you well said, with TechSight, and we want to transition all of our cytology to 100% QC. Right now, in the studies we've done, currently as part of mandated by CLIA, you have to have a 10% negative review of all your cytology cases.
Yes.
So what we're doing is we're converting so that our supervisor, instead of reviewing 10% of the cases from our cytotechnologists, the screening cases, we're going to review 100% using the TechSight algorithm, and we can do that faster than manual. So now, instead of only reviewing 10%, we're going to review 100% of the cases. So that's step one in the transformation for cytology. Cytology is, has its own technical challenges that we have to, but it's also, again, same thing happened with the pathologist, is how do we get the cytotechnologist to trust the AI algorithm, right? So that's, and once we do that, we're pretty much at over 95% of our cases now being whole site. So that's one. I think it's a very exciting from a workflow.
What's the scanner that you guys are using for cytology?
Right now, we're using Apredia, the 3D histotech. It's from the P1000. And interesting is that they have now a water immersion capability, so it helps with the cytology. So we're trying to look at, kind of multi-purpose scanners, versus trying to, have a specific scanner for a specific application.
Do you have?
We have two right now, the P1000. So they're high capacity scanners. Need more redundancy.
Good. This is good. I mean,
but looking at the future, one of the things that I was talking to a friend, Mahul Amin, a very well regarded uropathologist, you might have heard of him. He said, he gave me the term histomics. And I think that that is a, you know, something that we're already seeing. And, you know, if you look at, like you said, Artera that we're working with, you know, we're looking at predictive and prognostic information, whereas before we were looking maybe at a genomic test. And this is right from the glass slide. I mean, so you know, the things that are being developed, it's going to really change what we do. I mean, it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is so exciting and transformative, because now am I not only going to be able to diagnose cancer, but I'm going to give them right from the slide a predictive or prognostic result. Mm-hmm. Right there. So I think that those are the new opportunities that we see. Besides, you know, I think we're going to have multiple AI algorithms, you know, being developed now. I mean, we're working with some of those companies.
Mm-hmm. So other than this advice that you already gave to be workflow centric, any other advice for other pathology practices that consider digital transition? Any like tips,
well, I mean, number
tricks,
one is, I think,
or something like, remember
well,
this?
Well, you know, number one is you have to have buy-in from it. Everybody has to be on board, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has to be on board. And I think we can all get lost in the return on investment model, because, and I know that's important, and mostly in today's budgetary constraint hospitals, that is important to look at that. But sometimes it's hard to just quantify that 100%. But if you're going to embark on it, I think it's important to look at your workflow. You know, mm-hmm. you just can't say, oh, I'm going to just implement digital pathology. And, you know, I mean, you really have to look. And I think you have to look at it in stages, right? I mean, you got to build successes along the way so that you feel good about what you're doing instead of trying to do, you know, being a mile wide and an inch deep, you know, be focused and get, you know, and get something done that is meaningful to your organization and, mm-hmm. and again, to your patients. You know, one other technology that I'm going to do a plug here, but one other technology that I really like is Alpenglow. I think mm-hmm. that technology, looking at the whole 3D of a core or a tissue, I think that's going to also impact what we're doing in pathology. And that's very, very early. And we're collaborating with them on a grant that we have looking at prostate mm-hmm. cancer in Puerto Rican men. And it's exciting technology. And again, that's another potential game changer in pathology.
So you were in Miami before, and then you moved to Puerto Rico. What's the reason? Why did you go to Puerto Rico?
Well, I had a Puerto Rico here. I had a business in Miami. I had some partners, and we dissolved it. And then uh-huh. I just decided to stay in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And so I've been here, and it's exciting. Paradise. Yeah. It's very, very, very nice. Great environment. I think there's a lot of opportunity here. There's a lot of push by the government to attract technology companies. There's incentives here for technology companies, also for export of services from Puerto Rico. You've had companies like Optum open up call centers in Puerto Rico and others, because there's some very significant potential tax savings in R&D credits. So it's a beginning of an ecosystem for the Caribbean. And again, you know, we're sitting in the middle of between the North America and Latin America.
I know, you're in the center.
Thinking of the market, you could be serving. We're a bilingual.
Exactly. That also
country,
gives the
so we can, you know,
merge the South and the North.
And the North, correct.
Question. Mm-hmm. You are on the board of directors of Digital Pathology Association.
Right.
What's your role there? Or like, let me put it in a different way. What are the questions that you get most often? And what are the contributions? How do you contribute in that role?
Well, you know, I think it's a a very diverse group because, as you know, it's a mix of industry and clinical side. But I think that that's very important because I think there's this kind of two-way communication of the needs from the clinical side to industry and the needs from industry to the clinical side. So I think that that's a very important way of sharing information and helping and collaborating. You know, I think the whole payment issue and reimbursement issue is an area that everybody's collaborating on because it affects the whole ecosystem. Where I think we come together on that. And then the other thing is, you know, how do we expand the membership of the DPA and bring in others? You know, I'm very interested in, you know, again, voicing this into the Americas and help. I think digital pathology and underserved communities is very important. I think it's a way of kind of leveling the play field with pathology and pathologists. So I think there's a lot of opportunity at the DPA the runway is long to do a lot of positive things for our field.
Mm-hmm. So Digital Pathology Association, obviously, like have the educational arm, but do you think there needs to be a specific training or for digital pathology as discipline? Or do you think it's enough that people like learn it on their job when they join an organization that is already digital? How do you see that?
Well, I mean, I think the DPA does have, you know, multiple webinars and seminars, mm-hmm. but I think you hit something that is really beyond just the DPA. I think that if we embrace in pathology, digital and AI, and we embrace AI as a tool for healthcare, I think we're late in the education game. Mm-hmm. Medical schools, residency programs need to quickly adopt these and provide the trainees with the knowledge and skill sets to live in this new world. You know, I don't see a pathologist reading every single slide in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It might be reviewing, but he's not going to be the same. And he's going to need to know, or she's going to need to know what an algorithm is. How is it built? How do I know, you know, how do I get under the hood and be able to measure the efficiency or effectiveness of this algorithm? It's a whole new world and education is important. And so right now, you know, all of the programs and I think the DPA does what it can as an organization, but I think it's a much bigger challenge to drive, this into all aspects of education, both medical school and in residency programs. So, you know, how are the residents that are coming out today? Are they trained in digital pathology? Do they understand algorithms? I mean, now I know that there's, you know, fellowships in informatics and things like that, but, you know, how many programs are they really sitting down and diagnosing in digital and maybe not even using AI, but just digital pathology? We collaborate here with the University of Puerto Rico, their residency program. So we have residents that come through. So we're very focused on education. And we do that, but it's trying to, for them to see, the other thing is make sure they have the case mix, you know, so we do a lot of prostate. So they come here to learn about prostate, because as you know, some of these cases are now in the outpatient environment, are really no longer in the academic institution. So, mm-hmm. but I think that education is paramount in bringing in educating our new residents coming out.
Mm-hmm. You know what I see? I see like an overemphasis on using the tool, on teaching people like using the tools and being afraid that, oh, we cannot do this yet because people cannot use the tool, versus teaching the principles of image digitization, of imaging of light microscopy. Like, what is a scanner? It's actually a microscope. You don't have to be afraid of it. It has the same components, right? And then the other component, AI, like, don't demonize it. It's here. Learn to use it. Learn the principles that are guiding it so that you can decide, okay, is this a good tool for me or not? How it should be improved? I think, and this should come like a lot earlier than the actual application and using the tools, so that people come when, like, using a tool is like, okay, how long did it take you to use Microsoft Word? You opened it, you read the labels, and you were able to use it. And with like most modern software programs, this is the case. You can hover over things, read the user manual, and you're ready to use it. But okay, what's under the hood, and how much of this is relevant for us, and how much is more like the technical components? I think that still needs to be, and maybe later it's going to be less and less. Like, I'm thinking about the car. Do I have any idea what's inside the car? No, I have no idea. I just care that it drives. But it has been tested so many times that I don't have to need it. But I know that my cousins, who are like 20 years older than me, they can like dismantle and assemble a car again and fix the stuff that's in there, right? They knew it. You know, maybe particular, but they had particular interest. But 20 years ago or 30 years ago in Poland, you actually needed that skill to fix it. And I think we're in the transition period where, okay, for several years, we will need the knowledge to know what needs to be fixed and go to the creators and ask them to fix it. And at some point, we will not need that anymore, maybe for the new tools. So yeah, principles rather than the, like, which buttons to click, how to use the tools.
Yeah. Well, you know, as Dr. Santa says, you know, when do we drop the word digital and just say pathology?
Right. Radiology doesn't say digital radiology. They're just radiology.
Right. Right. So when does it just become normal that, and you're right, it's going to take time to do that. I mean, you know, pathologist, you know, I have this, I think, you know, everybody, you know, in these transition times, right, identify with something. And I think, I mean, if you look at every logo, there's a microscope on it, right, of some shape or form.
Yeah.
So there's that identity, you know, kind of a, that's your identity. It's the microscope. I mean, years ago, you're right, it used to be the beeper. If you had a beeper, you were a doctor, right? I mean, if it beeped, or you know, people walked around with a stethoscope. I mean, these are things that identify you, right? And sometimes it's hard to get rid of those things because they're become personal. You know them, you know how to maximize it, and again, it's learning something new. It's retooling yourself, and saying, wow, you know, but you have to give yourself that chance to do that. You know, it's like electronic medical records, right? You know, people fight. And I understand, but hopefully, like with AI, it'll make it better. It'll help, and we can spend more time with our patients and provide more care, more hands-on time with the people that need that. And maybe that's the you know, the future also for pathologists to become more and more a part of the care team, so they have that time, because, you know, a lot of these things are becoming very complex, right? Genomics, omics in general. And who best than the pathologist to lead that area to make sure that we're doing the right test at the right time, the right interpretation, and then supporting as part of the care team. So maybe these tools are there to change the way you practice, so that you can take and maybe that extra cognitive fuel you have to then be able to be that expert in the space that is fast changing, you know, with NGS, with all of these other things that maybe some of our other colleagues need support from.
So looking back at your journey with digital pathology, Is there something that you're specifically most proud of, or it's like, I would have done it anyway, so it's the way I operate, it's the way how we work, it was inevitable. What are your thoughts on that when you look back at what you did?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you kind of say, you know, you could kind of do that and be a little cocky about it. You know, we definitely embrace technology, but it really isn't possible without a team that was focused on it, that, you know, we breathe and live technology. We like it. So it's in our DNA. We look for all the opportunities to enhance our practice to provide better patient care. So when this was the opportunity and we saw that, you know, we wanted to be there. We wanted to be pioneers. I mean, that's definitely one that we enjoy. And I think that, you know, being part of the transformation of pathology is exciting. And in a sense, you know, we can prove that it can be done and it works. And we've learned a lot. There's a lot of experience here now collectively over 4 years. And then where can we go from here? I think the future is, the runway is long and exciting for people that want to be part of it.
I think you've definitely proved that it can be done, and you are an example for others. I mean, I'm impressed. I'm impressed by the like speed and consistency of how your practice embraces things, and that this is at the forefront. This is okay. If there is something new that can improve our patient's diagnosis, our patient care, we want to know about it. It's not like, okay, we already did digitization. We already have remote pathologists. We're good. No, you're like, okay, what's next? So thank you so much for doing this, for running, Core Plus that way. I know this is like a philosophy that you guys have at Core Plus. Yeah, thank you for joining me today. I've learned a lot and I enjoyed this conversation a lot.
Well, number one is you have an open invitation to Puerto Rico. So anytime you want to come.
Oh, my goodness. Anybody, I need to arrange something.
Yeah. And anyone listening to the podcast, we're always available to support. We're missionaries in this, and we want to do what's best for patients and for the industry and for digital pathology or pathology in general. So thank you so much for inviting me, for giving us this space, for letting us talk a little bit about our philosophy and our story, and look forward to other opportunities to converse with you. Really enjoy it.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the end. As I already said in this episode, I truly believe we are overemphasizing the teaching of how to use the digital pathology tools versus the principles of digital pathology. So I decided I need to do something about it, and I wrote a book, Digital Pathology 101. So if you want to learn the principles guiding digital pathology, the components, and basically start your digital pathology journey, this book is for you. It is free in the PDF format. I'm gonna share the link to it below. You can download the PDF for free, or you can buy it on Amazon as well and start your digital pathology journey right now. And if you already have some digital pathology knowledge, it's gonna help you structure it. It's gonna help you teach it to others, because the more people understand digital pathology, the quicker the adoption is gonna be. So go ahead, grab the PDF for free from the link below, and I talk to you in the next episode.